Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we get calls throughout the growing season. I want to reseed my lawn. When can I reseed my lawn? Well, right now is the time when you can reseed your lawn. We're going to start the hour today with late summer lawn care. And to start us off, we've got Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist Adam Toms. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so let's talk about what you can do right now that you can't do the rest of the year with your lawn, and then we'll talk about some of the other troubleshooting things that we can take care of.
Sure, no problem. So this is what we like to call the best time of the year to improve your yard, this weekend specifically. Now's the time to core aerate your yard, put out a fall fertilizer, and this is the best time to do that. What you're doing now will set yourself up for a greener next year because it's going to feed the whole plant. And not just grow out of it. And then also put out any seed in bare spots because the plants that are coming up, the seedlings, don't have to fight against all the weeds that happen in the summer and the drought. And then, of course, if your yard looks dry, like a lot of yards in the state, now would be the time to apply a little bit of water, too, to help it through.
All right. Yeah, we're getting water delivered in a fairly erratic manner.
Yeah.
A lot very early in the summer and then maybe a lot at a time here in the last week or so. So what are some of the things that you've been hearing about this summer or seeing this summer? What are some of the common problems people are encountering?
Sure. So one of the most popular ones is in new subdivisions where they've stripped off a lot of the topsoil or moved it around. It's maybe not evenly distributed. So they may have gotten a yard that they sodded. And there's a layer in there where the sod came on really good soil, but they have a clay undersoil. And so the first chance of drying out or spell without moisture, we see those parts of the yard dry out. The yard thins in those spots. And so you got to do things to try to improve that underlying soil.
Yeah, how do you do that?
So that's where the core aerification comes in. Go ahead and aerify your yard in as many different directions as you can. You've rented the machine or you've hired a lawn care service. So have them make Swiss cheese out of your yard. Poke as many holes as you can, and then if you can get a good compost or something like that to drag into those holes to try to improve the soil organic matter, improve the ability for the water to go down into the soil and be held, that will improve the grass that's coming up. And then,
how do you drag that into those holes? I think, you know, people get a little worried about, am I going to suffocate my grass if I toss stuff on top of it?
Right. So if you're going to top dress with a compost or something like that, you know, you go out and spread it out. You should see green leaf tissue through where you've top dressed, and then you can drag it, just flip over a broom and drag it upside down. That works fairly well, you know, like a stiff bristle push broom. Chain link fences, if you've got a bigger yard, you can just lay that down and pull it behind a riding lawnmower or something like that. Put a little weight on it, drag it around. That'll help move that compost down into those aerification holes, improving the soil.
Even if you are not adding anything to your soil, do you suggest dragging the yard to break up those plugs that get pulled out when you aerate the yard?
It never hurts. You know, it kind of breaks those up, kind of gets that off the surface, and helps bring it down in. The other option you can do is pull those plugs, let them sit, let them air dry, and then run your mower over them. It's going to be dusty, it's going to be dirty, but that'll do a really good job of chopping them up too. And then after you get done doing that, you're going to want to go ahead and sharpen your mower blade.
All right. So with core aerification, if you aren't in a new subdivision, what are some of the signs that you should be doing it to your lawn anyway?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that I get a lot of times is, well, my yard looked really good, and now it's starting to thin out. Especially in the drip lines of trees, that water has kind of run off those. It's penetrated the ground, pounded the ground, compacted it. So if you start to see those areas start to thin out a little bit, you know, if you have kids in an older yard that play in the same spot or a dog, those are both good reasons that you should aerify and try to help. That'll help thicken up your yard. That just allows a good gas exchange with the roots. Allows, again, as it rains, the water goes down in those holes created in the yard instead of running off.
Since this is a good time to plant seeds, we're still in that window, is this also a good time of year to think about smoothing out your lawn if you've got a little bit of a bumpy lawn or some ruts that have developed?
Yeah, yep, that's a great time. And that core aerification can help with that as well. You know, you can poke the holes, you can kind of drag the cores around, and that would help. They'll settle in the low spots in the yard, so that'll help smooth the yard. This is a great time to do that.
If you think that you need to plant grass seed, if your lawn has been looking particularly bad and you're thinking about overseeding, tell me what the situations are that would make that a good idea.
Sure. So overseeding, if your yard is, you know, you've got large patches that you don't feel will come back from just fertilization, and, you know, you've maybe lost a large chunk. Maybe the city has come in and they've needed to replace some sort of utilities in your yard, things like that that have thinned out. Maybe there's construction work. Those are all situations where you'll need to reseed. And so in that situation, spend the time, make sure to loosen the soil, whether it be, you know, tilling it or fluffing it or just running the aerifier over it a bunch of times. That'll loosen the soil, allow that seedling to get down into the soil, good seed-to-soil contact, and come up. Now, the one thing that most people forget about is once you put out the seed, it needs to stay wet. And so we're not talking about standing water. We're just talking about regular moisture throughout the day. And so, you know, a light watering in the morning before the sun comes up, maybe one when you get off work. Ideally, if you could set a timer and you could do one like at 2 o'clock and then again one when you get off work, just for that first days till you start to see that grass seedling emerge.
Yeah, about how long does that take?
Depending on what species you're going to use, you know, if it's a sunny location and you probably have a bluegrass there, then you're talking about anywhere from 14, 21, maybe up to 28 days, depending on what the temperatures are like. If you have some ryegrass in the mix or some fescues, that could cut it down anywhere from 3 to 14 days and it would emerge. And then remember that after that seedling's emerged, you can cut out some of those watering times, but you still need to give that plant water. So don't just shut off the water and walk away.
And don't throw down your seed and leave town for a week.
Right. Yeah, don't do that.
When you're driving around town and you see construction projects where they are planting grass seed after the construction project, I see it done in so many different ways with varying degrees of success. I'm just curious, is that a pet peeve for you as you look at how people are trying to reseed these patches of lawn?
Yeah, that's always something I shake my head at. The other one that I shake my head at a lot of times is you'll see the person that's put a little seed out in an area, and then they're standing there with the hose, and maybe it doesn't quite reach, so they're swinging the hose back and forth trying to swing water onto that spot, and 2 seconds of water is not enough water for that.
We get calls from people throughout the growing season who are so frustrated with the kinds of weeds that are encroaching in their lawn that they wonder if they need to just start over. Is there a case to be made for that, or should you work with what you have?
I always like to try to work with what you have because of the fact that there are, in almost every situation, there is some grass that's there. So let's diagnose what the bigger problem is. Is it that maybe your yard's become more shady and so you should switch to a little bit more of a shady mix and so you'd overseed in? But if you can thicken up what's there, that stuff's already proven that it can grow in what you're doing in your soils. So let's try to thicken that up first, and then if we have to add some seed, we can.
All right, so you're not a fan of the nuclear option.
I don't like it unless it's a situation like quack grass that's overrunning your yard. There's really not anything you can do there other than either enjoy the quack grass or completely wipe it out and start over.
It is green.
It is green, yep.
All right, anything else that I've missed on that list of things we should be thinking about right now?
The other thing we probably haven't talked much about is fertilizing, and now's a great time to put out an early fall application of fertilizer. So that will, you know, improve the color, and improved color means the plant's healthier. And then that will help set deeper roots for the next growing season. So next spring, you'll have deeper roots. That will produce, you know, a better plant, more drought tolerant, things like that. So you should hopefully have less problems going into next fall.
All right. Well, we've already got some lawn questions coming our way. I'll also bring Mark Vitosh, our DNR forester, into the conversation now. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
And Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And why don't we dive right in and get to the phones, the number to call with your questions. It can be about your lawn or your garden, your landscape, your trees. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Patty is on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Patty.
Good morning. I plant Kentucky bluegrass seed, but among that is this grass. I don't know if it's quack grass. It comes up, it's taller and thicker blade, and it comes in little clumps, like five or six. It looks like a little miniature ear of corn coming up. I don't like it.
What time of year is this coming up? Is it coming up in the spring and showing up now?
All the time. I'm always pulling it. I just yank it out.
So it could be a couple different things. With the fact that you're kind of mentioning a bunch type, I would guess maybe a quack grass or a crabgrass. That tends to have a little bit more of a broad type leaf blade. Another one would be tall fescue that could volunteer, more of a common type tall fescue. That could show up as well. If it's a crabgrass type issue, some sort of a pre-emergent herbicide in the spring would prevent that. Tall fescue, there's really, if it's volunteering in your yard, the best thing you can do is just keep hand pulling it. There's not a whole lot you can do there. Eventually, it should subside.
All right. So how should she approach identifying what's there?
Sure. So there's numerous resources on the extension page where you can identify what type of grass is there. That's probably the best solution there, is to kind of look at the extension page and see what type of grass it is, and that would help you solve your problems.
All right. So figure out what it is. And if she has having a hard time, is there a way that she can get in touch with Iowa State Extension to help with identification?
She can take some photos of the plant, preferably where you dig up a clump, and then take some photographs of the actual plant, and then send those to Hortline, which is Hortline, at iastate.edu.
All right, Patty, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. We will get to more questions in just a moment. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day, and you can join with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Adam Toms, Iowa State University Extension Turfgrass Specialist, Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll start with an email question from Ted with a question about his ginkgo tree. He says, my wife and I noticed that the leaves are changing to fall colors and starting to fall. The tree was planted about 5 years ago. It's only about 15 feet tall. We forgot to water it this summer. Is the tree going dormant early? Will it recover this spring? Is there anything I can do now to help it out?
Depending on the conditions, if the site is kind of dry, I mean, anytime a tree starts to actually literally turn fall color right now, there's some indications it's trying to shut down early because it's stressed. So I would suggest that they water it maybe once a week, give it a good soaking. On a tree that's been in the ground for 5 years, I would kind of go out to the edge of the branches and then work your way in and kind of soak that area, soak from the top down, give it a good soaking, water it a couple times, and then if we stay dry all the way through the fall, I'd give it water again. You don't want to overwater it, but give it some water and help it out, and all the way until late fall if it stays dry. But I'm kind of looking around in parking lots and different things, and I'm seeing trees start to change color. That's always an indication to me that tree is stressed.
Right. And in this case, in a parking lot, they're almost always stressed.
Well, they are. But, I mean, I've seen them in other sites, yeah, too. But yeah, when you see color this early, there's something going on. So watering is probably his best bet at this point.
All right. Here's an email from Caitlin. My neighbor and I both have sweet summer hydrangeas. The beautiful heavy blooms coupled with all the rain we've had is causing the whole plant to droop. With the blooms nearly touching the ground, they look so sad. Is there anything that can be done about this? Is this a sign of a weak plant? Should we cut any of the blooms?
Well, it kind of depends upon what kind of hydrangea it is. If you have a smooth hydrangea, they have the roundish flower heads. You can cut those back to the ground in late winter, early spring, and they'll come back. If you have a panicle hydrangea that tends to bloom in late summer with kind of cone-shaped flower heads, you can prune them a little bit in late winter, early spring, and maybe shape them up so that they're more sturdy.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got Carolyn in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Carolyn.
Good morning. We have relatively new sod. This is the second full summer on it. So now the weeds are starting to pop up. But we have not fertilized because we're trying to promote a yard for butterflies and bees. So hearing about fall fertilization, I just wonder, is it okay or safer to fertilize our lawn in the fall in terms of the bees and the butterflies?
So fertilizer really isn't going to interact with the bees and butterflies as far as that goes. It's just going to feed the plants that's there. And so, I mean, fertilizing in the fall is fine. If you're concerned about that, you know, the grass in the yard will continue to take up nutrients even after the first frost. So the bees and the butterflies will be out of here then. So if you feel like you want to wait on that, it's fine to do that as well.
But if Carolyn fertilizes now, I mean, she's also fertilizing the weeds that are in the lawn, right? So that's...
She is. If it's a, a summer annual weed, obviously it's going to be killed by the first frost anyway. So it kind of will be self-controlled by nature there in that situation.
All right. And if she's concerned about creating a healthy environment, I mean, if she but also wants to have a lawn that is mostly grass, there are alternatives she can look at, like corn gluten meal for controlling crabgrass and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Those are options as well. That would control crabgrass. That will also prevent any summer annuals from germinating. So it wouldn't be just specific for, like, eliminating crabgrass alone. And so it's kind of a tough battle there, but that is an alternative.
All right, and it won't harm butterflies or bees.
Right.
Carolyn, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. Let's go to John in West Des Moines. Hi, John.
Good morning. I have two once beautiful pear trees in my backyard. They're not Bradford pears, but I don't remember exactly what they are. They're valuable because they provide a nice screen. They have fire blight, which was confirmed by the pathology lab. I have an arborist working on them. They did a trim last winter with a sanitary technique. They just did a fertilization yesterday, and they're proposing, I think it's an insecticide injection coming up. None of this has been cheap, so my question is there hope for these trees, and am I just throwing good money after bad?
I'll throw something in here, and Richard can add if he wants. I would just continue to work on the fire blight, continue your sanitation. If I've done one fertilization, usually with trees, you don't have to do a lot of extra fertilization. Usually there's enough nutrients in the soil for them. As far as insecticides and stuff, I don't know if I would treat with any kind of insecticides. That's not your problem. Fire blight is actually carried by bees and flies and stuff like that actually to the flowers in the spring. And any kind of insecticide is going to harm them, but you're not going to stop that. And actually, with these last couple wet springs, we've had a lot of fire blight, and these ornamental pears are very susceptible to them. So I would probably just continue to work with it. And then at some point, depending on how much destruction that fire blight causes, you may just have to say, this isn't working anymore. I'm going to have to look at alternative species and replace that tree. But that disease really kind of comes and goes, John. I've seen it the last 19 years over here in Iowa City. One year we'll have it really bad. We actually had it really bad here 2 years ago, and actually this year I expected it to be bad again. It wasn't. In some years it'll be 2 years in a row. So continuing to sanitize and clean, that's about the best thing you can do.
And I would not fertilize, because if you fertilize, and let's say you overdo it, you're promoting excessive growth, and fire blight tends to affect that growth much more so than, let's say, some slower, more moderate growth. So you do not want to force a lot of new growth that might be more susceptible to fire blight.
All right, so John can kind of sit tight for now.
Keep sanitizing, but Yeah, I wouldn't put a lot of extra work into it.
And when you say sanitizing, John probably knows, but the rest of us don't. What's the
sanitation? So basically he's taken what he's doing is, and if you read about it on the ISU web pages, you're basically cutting back into green material, and a lot of times they'll tell you to dip your pruning material into a solution to sanitize that, but you're cutting down below where the infected tissue is to try to cut out that infected piece to try to sanitize it and reduce the inoculum for the next year.
All right, John, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we'll go to Bob in Renwick. Hello, Bob.
Hello, thanks, Charity.
Sure.
I've got some boxwood lining the front of my house, and they're extremely healthy and very full and lush. They're about 6 foot tall, and they're getting a little too tall now. I'd like to cut them back to about 4 feet. When's the best time to do that?
That's cutting them back quite a bit. I'm not sure how they're going to withstand that. They may not come back very well, because that's, you're cutting off like maybe a third, and that's pretty extensive. They may not come back very well. If you want to try to do that, I would probably do that around early to mid-April. But be aware that if you do that, they may not come back very well, or it may take them some time before they look good again. So that's pretty severe pruning.
Okay, well, if I don't touch them, will they get much taller than 6 foot?
It depends upon the variety. Most of the ones in Iowa don't, but there are some varieties that might, so it depends upon the variety.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Mark in Urbandale. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I have patches of itchweed that are showing up in the yard, and just wondering what's the best way to get rid of that and to keep it from encroaching.
When you say itchweed, could you describe the plant?
Yeah, it looks like kind of a, I think it's a viney kind of a thing, and it has clusters of three leaves, kind of poison ivy-like, but the leaves tend to be a little more ragged, jagged on the edges.
Okay.
And I notice some of it, in some spots sometimes, it's matured enough that there's like a little red, kind of a strawberry-looking thing that will develop on it.
Okay.
That's the false strawberry, or whatever it's called, Richard. It looks like a little strawberry, and actually the leaf looks like a strawberry, but I'm not sure what the actual name of the plant is. It looks exactly like a fake strawberry plant, but I think it is some type.
Is it a kind of a stinging nettle, or is it?
It's usually not very itchy, but it's the plant looks exactly like a strawberry plant, but I'm not sure what the berry is about the size of your pinky nail is what I think he's describing.
Does that sound right,
yes.
Mark?
Yes, and then the leaves will irritate.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So if that's the case, then I'd put on a broadleaf herbicide sometime this fall, sometime between, let's say, late September and mid-November.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Marianne is on the line next in Ames. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Charity. I have a blue spruce in my backyard, and with last year's cold winter, I have a lot of dead branches in the spruce. I was wondering if I cut the dead branches out, if that space would fill in.
In general, it will not, but you can prune those. You can prune the dead material at any time. Is the dying portion kind of at the bottom of the tree and kind of working?
No, it's interspersed all over the tree. I thought it was because of the cold weather we had this last winter.
How big a tree is it?
Maybe 30 feet.
Okay. Well, if that tree is stressed at all, too, we actually have a canker disease called Cytospora canker that will, if you look at the tree, you'll just see a branch there, a branch there. They'll flag and kind of die. And what you want to look at when you prune those out, look back along the branch to see if you find any pitch or sap. It just tells you that canker is there. And we use the word sanitation already once today. So the best thing you can do, if that's what it is just prune those dead out. But basically, the side branches close to that, where that came, will kind of fill it in, but there won't be a new branch coming. So That tells me, though, your tree may be under some stress or something may be going on. So I would look at those branches to see if it has a canker, and then go from there. But then prune out those dead branches. About all you can do.
All right, Marianne, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Tom in Ames. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I live on a wooded lot in Ames, and it's sloped, and as part of the in the shade because it's wooded. I was wondering if there's a plant that we could plant on the slope to help prevent erosion, and also if Virginia wild bluebells would work for that, and is there a source of getting it, those plants?
Well, yeah, you can definitely put in some native plants. For example, wild ginger would be a nice ground cover. It's native. You can put in Virginia bluebells too, but they die back by usually mid-June, so there's no cover there the rest of the summer. So I would look at various native plants. Woodland phlox is basically there the year round.
Woodland sedges. There's some there available.
Put some of those in there, and they kind of spread on their own because they either spread by rhizomes or seeds. You could put in wild columbine, various native plants, Solomon's seal.
Maidenhair fern.
Yeah, so a number of different things. So, and the nice thing is you can buy these at garden centers. They've been propagated, and you can actually buy them.
I would also Google.
At most garden stores?
Not everyone, but you'll find these at garden centers because they are very, very suitable for woodland areas that are shady.
I would also Google Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota. They have a lot of native woodland. And then also Ion Exchange up in Northeast Iowa sometimes has some of those, like native sedges and some of those. Sometimes you can even buy them in plugs and stuff.
Is this a good time of year to get those plants?
You'll probably see more in the spring. Usually by late summer, they've kind of run out of some of their nursery stock. So usually the spring is the best time.
And with the dryness we're having and stuff, I think spring, hoping that you'd have the moisture once you got those in and stuff, would be better also.
All right, Tom, good luck with that. Thank you for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Next up, we'll go to Kennard in West Des Moines. I'm sorry if I said your name wrong. Hello.
Oh, you got it close, but it's Bob.
Oh, hi, Bob. That's not what I have written down here, but all right, tell me what your question is.
Well, I'm standing outside. I'm looking at my redbud tree, who over the past week has half of the tree has turned yellow, and the leaves have been falling off, and it looks like the rest of the tree is going to go also. Now, going back 2 years ago, I did have a short evergreen bush underneath all around that surrounded the tree, and I took all of that out. I don't know if that would have had any effect on what's happening now, but it looks to me like the tree is gone, or is going pretty quick. That's one thing. The other, I've got a lilac about 75 feet away from there, and all the leaves are turning, shriveling up, and dying on that bush also. So I have called an arborist, and they're 7 weeks out to even come take a look at it. And I thought, well, by that time, most of the trees are going to be bare anyway, so they won't be able to take a look. But anyway, that's my story.
Right. So what I think on the lilac, I would assume you probably have some type of disease. And I would send a sample to our plant diagnostic clinic. To do that, go on your computer, go to a search engine, and type in Iowa State University Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. That should go directly to the clinic website where they tell you how to submit a sample as far as what they need, how to package it, where to send it. And I would send a sample in, and hopefully you'll get a response on that.
Could he look at the base, too, Richard, to see if he had any lilac borer or anything like that? Or is it too late in the season for something like that to show up?
I think we're seeing a lot of disease on lilacs this year.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that's probably what it is.
Is the red bud, are the leaves just yellow and then brown, or are you getting some that are just turning brown also?
They're
They're turning brown. Yep. And they're shriveling up entirely. Most the lower branches are bare already.
Okay.
The upper ones have turned brown. It's just working from the bottom up.
It's kind of late in the game, and Richard can add to this too, but there is a disease called verticillium wilt that you can't see on red buds. It is pretty late. Normally that shows up kind of mid-summer, but we've had a pretty stressful year. The other thing I would look for is any kind of physical damage down around the base or anything like that. I think removing the material didn't harm it, but you also may want to look at sending a sample too, but look up verticillium wilt.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We can talk more about Bob's redbud tree in a moment. You can also join us. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Before the break, we were talking about Bob's redbud tree, and Mark, you were saying he needs to check it for verticillium wilt, and we didn't get a chance to get Richard's take on that. Richard, did you have anything you wanted to add?
My concern was, again, verticillium wilt, too.
Okay.
That is something that does strike red buds, usually again, though, in midsummer, not this late usually, and the plant may go very quickly if that's what it is.
But there's been nothing normal about this year.
No.
I mean, timing, because we still have oak wilt and Dutch elm disease and some of these other things still showing up now. So I think it's a possibility. But like I told him, I would also look for any, I don't think removing the material that he removed 2 years ago probably had any impact unless he actually grubbed them out and actually got into some root systems. If he did that, if he just cut things off, but if he pulled plants or had them pulled, he could have caused some root damage, which could have caused stress even now 2 years later. But if he just cut things off, but I would look for any kind of physical damage along the trunk too that may be causing some problems.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Randy's on the line in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. We got an older oak tree. It's not red oak. It might be white oak or bur oak. And I think it's got oak wilt. Is that best to take that tree out as soon as possible so it doesn't spread to any other oak trees?
The thing I would do, Randy, is to make sure what species it is. With oak wilt, it's really common on the red oaks. And on the red oaks and black oaks, it'll actually kill that whole tree usually within 6 to 8 weeks. So like on pin oak, red oak, black oak, they'll die 6 to 8 weeks. On the bur oaks, we actually have a disease called bur oak blight that's actually pretty common this time of year, and I'm seeing it right now over the last month or two where a lot of the leaves will turn brown and fall off. But that tree's not necessarily dead if it has bur oak blight. So I would try to make sure I know what the species is and the pattern before I go and take that tree out, because it could be something else. We actually have on some of the red oaks and pin oaks, we have a canker disease called Brotosperia twig canker that's causing all these little pockets of brown all over them, especially
yes,
along I-80 and stuff.
Extensively about
okay,
that last
sorry,
week. So.
But we're seeing a lot of that too. So there's a bunch of different things going on, Randy. I would make sure before I cut a tree down that that's what I have going on.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get a few email questions in here. This one is from Chris in Ames. I have a 3-year-old birch tree that is partially under my neighbor's maple tree. It seems to be in good health overall, except for one question. One of the 4 main trunks is bending almost like it's not strong enough for its height. Is this common? Should I leave it be and see what happens?
I would leave it be for another year or so, but I wouldn't try to pull it up or... And if it doesn't kind of straighten out, I would go from 4 to 3.
All right, and that won't probably be a problem?
It shouldn't be. I mean, sometimes where those come up in clusters and the way they plant them and stuff, sometimes you'll get one. And two, the other thing is when you have all this growth this spring, sometimes they actually get heavy, and if they don't lignify very well, you'll get one that's off balance a little bit.
All right, here's a question from Tom in Dubuque. I have a ground ivy problem near or adjacent to where I've established asparagus and strawberries. I understand triclopyr is going to be the best to apply. What degree of caution do I use around my fruits and veggies?
Well, that's strictly for a lawn situation. Actually, in a flower bed or a fruit garden, you're going to basically have to pull it up or dig it up. The nice thing is on that is that ground ivy doesn't have a very deep root system, so you can actually pull or dig it up pretty easily. But you can use it around trees in the yard. Just make sure that you apply it carefully. And if you do so, it should not harm the trees in the yard.
All right, let's do a few lawn questions here. This one's from Mary. A few years ago, I was told I have nimble will in my lawn. However, yesterday, an irrigation worker told me it looked more like creeping bent grass. What are the best control methods for each problem? Although perhaps identification might be the place to start, right, Adam?
Yeah, I'd probably start with identification. Send a picture into the Hort line, and we'll take a look at it. And I'd start there. The good news is, honestly, that nimble will and creeping bent grass both can be controlled by a product called mesotrione. The timings are just a little bit different on when you'd control them. So find out what it is and then figure out how to control it.
All right, here's a question from Kevin. My neighbor has abundantly more weeds than grass. If he ever decides to start over and till everything up, would you recommend tall fescue for those folks who tend to ignore their yards? Another neighbor has a nice thick yard of tall fescue, never seems to have weeds, and seems to be very drought resistant.
Yeah, tall fescue is definitely more drought resistant than, say, Kentucky bluegrass.
Do you have any advice for Kevin on how to talk to his neighbor about it? Mark says it's his yard.
It's my yard.
Yeah, right.
I mow it on a regular basis, though.
Right. Oh, okay. See, that's a good first step.
Right.
But I don't live next to Kevin,
no.
So that's good.
Yeah. I think it's about probably a little bit of neglect there as far as that goes. If they're not fertilizing, whether it's tall fescue or bluegrass, that's probably a bit of an issue with the weeds moving in. So I would suggest tall fescue. It's going to be a little bit more drought tolerant for them. It's going to require a little less nitrogen than, say, bluegrass.
All right.
So that would be an option.
He has a question about his lawn as well. He says, is 10-10-10 ever appropriate for your turf? And if not, what ratio should one look for in the early fall fertilizer?
As a starter fertilizer, initially establishing 10-10-10 would be okay. But it's all quick release. We'd rather have something slow release. As far as a ratio goes for the fall, you should really look at a soil test, have that done. But it'd be something with a decent amount of nitrogen, and then you could have some potassium in it as well. You really don't need phosphorus on established turf.
All right, and here's another lawn question. My lawn has a 3x2 foot glossy chocolate brown spot. The grass is not dead. It just started this late summer. What could it be?
Could be anything.
So maybe a picture sent to Hortline is a good idea there? Or?
Is it actually something on the grass blades or something else growing in the spot?
Unfortunately, I've shared all the information I have.
Well, if it were rust, it would be kind of a reddish, brownish orange.
Right.
And if it were rust, it would come off on your shoes as you walked across it. And if it's rust, typically, it goes away by itself once the weather changes, the grass starts to grow. And if you were to fertilize it in September, that would promote growth. You have to mow, and the rust kind of goes away.
All right.
If it's rust.
Yeah.
All right. So if that's the case, then hopefully that'll work out. Why don't we get back to the phones? Jeff is on the line in Olwine. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. My question is this. I save a portion of my seed, my potato crop back every year for seed for the following year. And I've never really felt like I've had any way to measure this, but I've always saved medium to large size potatoes. But does it matter? If you save large potatoes, does that get a more robust potato crop the following year? And just the opposite of that, if you save small ones, does it matter? Could I save the plant or save the small ones back for seed and just eat the big ones, you know.
It doesn't really matter as far as the size of the tuber. So if you want to save something and plant them next spring, you can. So, but it doesn't really matter as far as the size of the tuber.
So saving small ones back would be...
would be fine, sure.
All right, enjoy your big potatoes, Jeff. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's do an email. This one's from Betsy in Rock Island. About 10-plus years ago, while deciding on a ground cover, I planted chameleon flower. It took and seemingly did well until it started to choke out the irises. I responded by digging it up. My question is, how do I get rid of it before it takes over the yuccas, Japanese iris, etc.? Also, I do a lot of digging because I value water and don't want to infect the system. In other words, I don't trust poisons and I don't want to use them in my yard.
I don't recognize the common name.
All right. There's the, I do have the scientific name. I just didn't want to say it.
Okay.
All right. So it's Houtunia cordata, H-O-U-T-T.
Oh, yes. Yes. That is a very aggressive plant. Houtunia. I'm not sure on the pronunciation.
Well, good. I'm glad you're not sure either. All right.
But that is a very aggressive plant. It is a ground cover type plant. It's going to take persistence, patience.
She's wondering if she could cover it with dark plastic or put a raised bed on it.
Well, I think what I would try to do would be to dig it up and realize it's going to be a process. It's not a one-and-done thing where I would dig it up. I would wait a few weeks. If it reappears, dig it up again and basically be very persistent and basically eventually starve out the plant. But it may take a year, possibly longer.
All right, so this is a long-term hobby, an exercise program, all kinds of good things.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good luck with that, Betsy. Let's get back to the phones. We've got Brian on the line in Lisbon. Hi, Brian.
Hi, good morning. I have a 4-in-1 grafted apple tree I planted about 15 years ago, and I haven't been the best at pruning every year, and last night I got home from work. There's a pretty good-sized lower branch that had broken off either from the wind or from the weight of the branch with the apples. And my question is, you know, I took the chainsaw and I cleaned up that cut as best as I could. Would you recommend a seal for that cut this time of year or let it be?
Just let it be.
Just let it be, okay.
And there should be a swelling, Brian. If it broke halfway, like on the branch itself, there's a thing called the branch collar back next to the trunk where there's kind of a small swelling. You want to make your final...
Well, it was at the trunk. It was at the trunk.
So did it rip into the trunk then?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So just kind of clean... You may let it sit a while, and then once it kind of dries up, clean some of the stubby material so eventually it'll try to callus. But if you seal it with anything, that'll make the decay worse. If it's a big wound, though, you'll just have to watch it over time, and you may eventually, long-term, get some decay. But it'll take quite a few years for that to start being an issue.
And if you have a large crop and other branches are bending, you might want to take off some of the fruit to lessen the weight and then maybe do some pruning early next spring.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. And next we'll go to Matt in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a red oak tree that's got chlorosis. I was wondering if I could treat that myself or if I, one, should treat it myself and also send in a sample of the leaf.
What I would actually do... Matt, is you can actually, since you're in Cedar Rapids, if you just want to send me an email picture of it, we can try to diagnose, excuse me, that's what it is for sure, because chlorosis isn't as common on true red oak. It's more common on the pin oak, but there are some treatments that you can do, and I can help you out with that. If you just go to our iowadnr.gov webpage and then find forestry and go to landowner assistance, you can find my email and you can send me some pictures and I'll help you out.
All right. Matt, thanks a lot for your call. And next, let's go to Jason in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jason.
Hello. I'm calling about a willow tree that I planted about 4 or 5 years ago. And I planted it in relatively close proximity. proximity to some walnut trees, and I've noticed that although it grows very well in the spring and it seems to be progressing nicely, it drops its leaves early every year, and I noticed the kind of black splotchiness that I think comes from the walnut trees, and I'm wondering if I should be concerned about that. I don't know that there's anything I can do about it because it's already established and planted, but I guess my question is there something I should be doing or could do?
Jason, is the site pretty moist where it's growing?
Yes.
It's not a sandy soil or light soil or anything like that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a pretty dark soil. There's some sand deep down, but I think where it's at,
it's pretty moist.
Pretty moist.
The other thing that can happen, though, even though, I mean, as dry as it's been, the thing to look for on that willow, if it's due to dryness and stuff, a lot of times that leaf color will be on the inner leaves first. If they turn kind of yellow, that's usually more of a dry stress or you know, dryness problem. The thing with black walnuts, they do produce a chemical called jugolone, and different plants have different sensitivities to it. Most trees usually can handle it pretty well. So I would look to see what the pattern is. But if it is related to that walnut, there's not much you can do. But again, most trees are fairly adaptive. I see more problems with tomatoes and some of the other garden plants related to the walnuts than I do with trees. So there may be something on the site that's going on too. Because if it's doing it consistently, and actually the last two falls have been fairly late summer, been kind of dry. So I would look to see if that pattern is more, is it the inner leaves turning yellow?
Oh,
lost him.
Well,
okay. My fault.
Sorry about that, Jason.
That's okay. But I would have him look to see if the inner leaves are turning kind of yellow, because that may be more of a dryness issue.
All right, Jason, thanks a lot for your call. And we're nearly out of time, so I'll try to squeeze in a couple of email questions here. And we've got a lot of people on the phones. Call back next Friday. Sorry about that. Here's a question from Karen in Des Moines. It's about yellow nutsedge. Is there a time of year or stage in the plant's life cycle when pulling nutsedge won't lead to the nutlet sprouting? I sprayed it twice with nutsedge killer, but it wasn't very successful.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Hand pulling is really tough. Those nutlets like to stay in the ground, and then you go from one plant to five or six. The best time to do that would be if the soil is really wet. That would be your best luck there. Timing-wise, I would do a midsummer spraying. I'm not sure when she was spraying, but midsummer when it's got the most active growth is the best time to control yellow nutsedge.
All right. Good luck with that. And maybe a final question from Rosie. My clematis are drying out. I'd like to cut them down to about a foot from the ground, but I've read that clematis bloom on the previous year's growth. I'm fine if they don't bloom next year, but I'd really like to know how to raise healthy clematis plants.
Well, some clematis, many of them, bloom on the current year's growth. So I would be inclined to prune them back early next spring and maybe prune them back to a foot.
All right. Good luck, Rosie. And thank you, everybody who called and asked questions today. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Adam Toms, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Iowa State University Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms. And Mark Vitosh, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.